to ignorance and confusion. Three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they were run over by a bus driven by a somewhat grouchy Keanu Reeves. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Michael, Neil, Phil, and the gang.
Good evening, and welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Song Talk Radio. This is the show with songwriters talking to songwriters about the craft of songwriting. But sometimes we like to do something different, and this is one of those times.
We're going to talk about sewing.
We're going to be talking about sewing, yes, seams and inseams. No, we're going to be talking about soundtracks, and we're really excited. But we want to find out what you think are your favorite soundtracks, and what do you think about soundtracks in general. So why don't you send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. Send us a tweet at Song Talk Radio, or even a message on Facebook, and we'll probably see it. And we'll share your information in real time. You can be famous just like us. And of course, with me, as always, are the very somewhat dedicated and some always laughing members of the Song Talk Radio Action
Team.
Yeah. You can become even more famous.
Yes. It's Michael Proudfoot. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
Do you have a
Looking
good
forward to the show?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, because
I
you
love
are.
The soundtracks, man.
Well, of course, because you're a film guy.
Well, there is that too. Yeah.
Yeah, you were actually a director.
That's true.
We still are, I guess.
I think I still am.
Yeah.
I just haven't directed anything in a little while.
That's true.
And at least not my own. I'm a director for hire at the moment.
And Neil Modi, how are you doing, Neil?
Yeah, pretty good. I like me a good soundtrack, too. Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
And our special guest back with us again is Mr. Matthew Reed. How are you doing, Matthew?
Hello, I'm great. It's great to be here. I like listening to tracks of sound.
Well, that's true.
It's even better. And you even write tracks of sound, don't you?
I have.
Right. So you're a composer and a director. We have a composer, a director.
Yeah.
And
we need a caterer.
And a caterer.
We need a caterer.
Right. Actually, I think we need an air conditioning specialist here.
What's that? Gaff? What do they call them? Gaffers?
Gaffers,
yes.
Well,
or the best
on a radio.
What's that?
Gaffer would be useless on a radio show.
Okay.
It's either electric, well, so gas, or lighting.
Yeah. Oh, lighting, okay.
Oh, there you go. And on social media, it's Micah.
Gosh, I hope I can
talk. How you doing, Micah?
Hey, Micah.
I'm okay.
That's Project good. Sun, you don't have a microphone.
Yes. It's okay.
He says he's fine, and he's not projecting.
And, of course, on the board today is Rita. Hi, Rita.
Rita.
Hello. She's holding up a piece of paper.
She has a blank
she's
page.
She's miming something.
It's laryngitis.
She has nothing,
we'll
you have nothing to say. Right. So every now and then we like to do the theme show because it's kind of a fun thing to do. And we're going to talk about soundtracks. So I was thinking about this, and this is one of those exercises when you start going through all the soundtracks you love, it gets harder and harder to pick the ones you actually want to talk about.
How do you choose?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you, how do you choose? Well, what is a soundtrack? Is a soundtrack, like I think of certain movies like recently Baby Driver or Guy Ritchie films that have great songs.
Or Tarantino.
Like them, right? Yeah, or Tarantino.
Tarantino or Martin Scorsese. Yeah. So those are soundtracks, but they're comprised of other people's songs,
right?
Yeah. As opposed to a composer.
Well, I think because those songs aren't specifically written for
the movie purpose.
Yeah, the repurpose.
Sometimes used really cleverly.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Though I did think when Tarantino used the theme from Cat People in Inglourious Bastards, I think that crossed some sort of line. It was written for another film. You can't just take a theme from another film. It was the theme song of another film, and he put it in a different film.
Yeah.
That's wrong.
And I'd actually refer our listeners to our show from 2017, more than 2 years ago, February 22 and 17. We actually did a theme show similar to this one, where we picked songs
from
films.
From
movies,
cool.
Right? And we picked our favorite songs. And then that was exactly that. And in fact, I did pick a Tarantino movie.
And what's really fun is that show actually never went out on the podcast. Podcast feed.
Correct.
Because
I just found that out today.
Because of reasons. So
it's much more valuable now. So if you find it in a garage sale, it's probably worth hundreds of dollars.
I think it's trending on eBay right now.
That's true. So Matthew,
it's too late then.
How do you approach listening to other people's work as a soundtrack composer yourself?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I suppose a lot of the time, mostly I'm there for the movie. So the soundtrack will present itself if there's something interesting. And that happens every so often. A lot of the time, the soundtrack functions well, and that's sort of the end of it for me. But if there's something a little extra, and every so often a soundtrack is special, and that's not to say that it's distracting necessarily. It's just that it'll catch my musician ears and think, oh, that's an interesting sound, or that's something I wasn't expecting to hear.
You ever come to a movie on a subsequent viewing and then really notice the soundtrack?
Another good question.
Told you this is what we're full of.
Yeah.
Full of something.
There's a rare opportunity for second viewings these days. There are some movies I'll watch again and again and again. But I think more contemporary movies, I haven't done that as much.
Right.
And catching the soundtrack a second time, thinking, oh, I missed that. I don't think it's happened yet. Yeah. I think it's always been the first time through.
Because there's one of our selections, Michael's selection tonight, where I want to watch that movie again and listen to the soundtrack.
Well, it wasn't until I watched it a second time when I get to it that I really noticed it. Because like you, Matt, I was, you know, I see the movie first, and almost if I notice the soundtrack, it's usually for negative reasons. Like
yeah, right.
And there's a couple. I'll throw this open to the floor. Can any of you think of a movie where it was a bad soundtrack or a distracting soundtrack?
Usually I think there's too much. The thing that drives me nuts with a lot of modern movies is they're terrified of any kind of silence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so they have to have music like through every second, and it gets so exhausting and so distracting. Mm-hmm. And it's like...
I know. There was one recently, one best picture. I don't know. Maybe the one about Winston Churchill, where Gary Oldman played Winston Churchill, The Finest Hour, something
that. Yes.
And there's a scene between the Prime Minister... between Winston Churchill and someone else, a very tense dialogue scene. And there's music throughout the whole thing. Mm. And, like, it's stirring, and it was so in the way of enjoying what was really going on. And it kind of made you think how artificial the whole process was. That it wasn't two people talking about this. It was a movie, and you were supposed to feel certain ways.
Right.
Yeah. But
you asked that question to us when we talked about the show last week, and I couldn't think of anything until just this instant.
Oh, yeah?
And I can't think of a specific movie, but you know those, like, really bad rom-coms where they have, like, this sort of cheesy, not even, I wouldn't call it big band music, but just, like, this really bad, like, swingy jazz sort of little thing going on at every little scene. And, and it's the sort of thing where they're not even telling
usually a large dog involved.
Yeah, there's a dog and there's some, they're not going to get together, but then they do get together. There's a montage scene or something. But it seems to be, like, after every little scene that they insert one of these little bits, and it's really, really annoying.
Yeah, so sometimes it's not even the music. It's where it's used in a film.
It's where it's used, and it seems to be the same style of music no matter what the scene is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, whether or not soundtrack music, is it supposed to lead you emotionally, or is it supposed to drag, like, you know, letting you sort of experience
different approaches. Depends on the director and what the director wants and the director's aesthetics.
In The Godfather, there isn't much music in the scenes. The music comes after the scene to kind of take a moment to reflect on what happened. There's a book, and Walter Murch, the editor, talks about that, that he doesn't want music, this sort of sound design, but the music doesn't really happen. Like where in the first one, where Michael Corleone shoots the gangster and the police officer. Spoiler alert. there's no music there. You hear subways, even though there's no subway visible. But once he shoots him and drops the gun, then the music rises up, and you have that sort of moment of catharsis or reflection for a bit until we get to the next scene. And I thought that's a kind of useful way of using music.
Mm-hmm. So we have actually a listener email from our producer, Vanessa.
Oh, hey, Vanessa.
She is so excited to listen to the episode about soundtracks.
Cool.
She writes, I love and really appreciate a good movie soundtrack. When I was younger, I saw a movie with a great soundtrack. I would head out the next day to buy the soundtrack on CD, the horror. I would sometimes end up going to a few different stores if the soundtrack ended up being too hard to track down. But one of my all-time faves has to be the soundtrack to the movie of Moulin Rouge, which is...
Oh, that's really clever.
Yeah, which is loved by almost every female I've ever known. Directed by Baz Luhrmann. One of her favorites. It has amazing attention to props and costumes, as well as song choice. And that's so interesting because they take little bits of songs.
Well, they had cover songs done for that. So they have a lot of popular songs, but they're all recorded by the actors in the film.
But often, sometimes just pieces of the, which I have no idea how they handled the rights for that.
They paid them.
Soundtrack has a really great selection of music. Ties that whole movie together.
Yeah.
Instead of just random songs throughout the film. Yes, Bowie's. It's great. The ever popular song "Lady Marmalade" by Pink, Christina Aguilera, Lil Kim, and Maya also came from the soundtrack.
Who the hell is that?
Anyways,
I believe he said Aguilera.
Anyways, I could go on forever about this wonderful movie soundtrack, but you'll stop there. Thank you, Vanessa.
Thanks, Vanessa.
So let's start off with Neil's first choice.
Yeah. So it actually didn't have a hard time picking this one because I picked the Danny Elfman's original 1989 Batman theme from the opening credits of the movie because to me, I mean, I was a teenager at the time. That was a huge movie when that came out in 1989, and for me, the music was a big part of it because I was in high school, sort of in band, studying classical music, and this thing came out and it's just like, what is this? It was kind of mind blowing at the time because at that point, I'd grown up on Star Wars and Indiana Jones and the John Williams stuff, and that's as far as I was concerned, that was movie music, right? And then Danny Elfman came along and started doing all these weird and wacky things, and I was like, this is really fascinating, interesting, and me and my friend just just listened to that tape like over and over and over and over.
It was a really popular soundtrack.
Yeah, it was
and
a very
Prince
popular
also had a lot of songs.
And Prince that's had right. some songs on it.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool.
Very long song.
Danny Elfman is a very, he's got kind of, it's like carnival-esque, like it's like carnival music sometimes.
He's kind of manic and kind of strange at times. I mean, the other big Danny Elfman thing for me is The Nightmare Before Christmas, where he wrote all the songs, which are really great.
And the theme
music for The Simpsons, of course,
Did he do the theme for The Simpsons?
Yes, that's a Danny Elfman song. So the interesting thing to me about the Batman theme is that it's a good demonstration of theme and variation because it starts off with a very simple melody, da, 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 just a little minor scale thing, and then the horns do it in a different way, the strings do it in a different way, and he throws in these little flourishes and things in between, but it's very much that melody that just kind of repeats in all kinds of different ways, different orchestrations, different rhythmic patterns, and different.
I don't remember that. So, did you bring it? Can we listen to it?
I brought it, and we can take a listen. So, let's take a listen for that.
Let's test this.
Okay, let's take a listen.
Thank you. in a world where people are in a round a bunch of microphones.
Yeah. And a gong to finish. And a gong to finish it. Was that a gong at the end? Was that a gong?
It was
at
a tent. Yeah.
It is a great example because if you do listen to the song, the melody is very clear and you can actually hear the different instruments kind of responding to it.
Yeah.
So it's actually, it's a great way of actually learning how to do a piece of music like that is by sitting and listening to it and figuring out, okay, the horns are doing this line. And then, you know, a few bars later, the strings are doing this kind of line. You can really sort of pull it apart.
It's one motif at different speeds and it can counterpoint with itself. Yeah. Which also has the very good practical use of being able to write something quickly if you can if you can use the same material over and over again, keep it it a little bit interesting. If you can use it contrapuntally.
There is like a B part in there where it kind of slows down and there's kind of a B part.
Well, it's the same line, the ba 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 ba, and there, he's modulating, but he's using the same motif.
But that other
motif.
Part, the, it kind of slows down and there's a how's it go now? Anyway, there's another
it's the same motif, even when slowed down, like ba 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 bee, ba ba, it's there, and then when he
sustains and drags
that's
out
right.
for tension,
and when it's fast, it's ba 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 bum bum bum, it goes up and modulates, but it's using the same motif over and over.
Is that a something you use in your own work? Very often?
Oh, sure, you've got you have to again. It's for practical reasons as well as musical reasons.
And certainly throughout the whole soundtrack, throughout the whole movie, he does bring that melody back numerous times, and again, different variations, softer, louder, more dynamic, slower, faster, or whatever.
To reflect what's going on in the scene.
Yeah,
but there's still when you see Batman.
That melody is kind of the signature of that soundtrack.
Yeah, I can't remember what happens when Vicki Vale shows up.
She gets her own theme.
Does she have her own theme? Yeah, she gets her own theme.
Because I know he's doing. I mean, he's very much a Bernard Herrmann fan of smaller motifs than like they would use in the Golden Age. So not so much themes, but these not even. Like the leitmotifs of, like, say, Wagner. But it's a very Wagnerian score, a very Brucknerian score in the sense of what it sounds like with the with the heavy brass and the big strings. It's a romantic score for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, it's very, very simple how he does it. And
yeah, because the melodies are all, like, everything's very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Very memorable. Like, he writes very hooky soundtracks sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's... it's evocative, but it's not too complicated. Sometimes the symphonic work has so many different themes and so many things going on, it can be kind of overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And his stuff is sort of sounds big, but it's still, I think, very approachable because he keeps the melodies simple and hummable and, you know, which is a tough thing to do.
And he also scores for people like Tim Burton and I think, did he do the Barry Sonnenfeld. Anyway, for directors who have quite ornate visual approaches as well, so
right.
it seems to fit
in that regard for sure.
Well.
Yeah, he's teamed up a lot with Tim Burton for sure.
Whereas
he was
some people
guy.
Are a little more laid back.
Yeah. Speaking of laid back,
which might be a segue to my choice.
Yes,
and I was
that worked very well.
There was a lot of soundtracks. I did not find it as easy as you did, Neil. I thought of. The Peter Gabriel soundtrack to The Last Temptation of Christ, which is wonderful.
And even
Dead Man, which is Neil Young. And it's just him and his electric guitar and a lot of distortion and feedback. It's really interesting.
Wow.
But what I landed on was this great soundtrack. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross for The Social Network, David Fincher's film. And he did something really interesting where he took electronic music, very few acoustic pieces, mostly just piano, and made very emotional music. I was hard-pressed to find one track to showcase, but the one I did pick is about having an idea, working hard, a lot of brain work, and then having an idea. So very intangible and cerebral stuff. But it is, a great – it sounds like what that would be.
I've never been clear about what Atticus Ross's role in the collaboration is.
So Atticus Ross had done soundtracks before. I can't remember offhand for what.
Because Trent Reznor tends to work with him on soundtracks, and he's not part of Nine Inch Nails.
This was Trent Reznor's first soundtrack, And okay. I think Fincher had approached him, and he said, I'd love to do it. But he'd just come off tour, and he was burnt out. He'd just gotten married. And he's like, I don't want to do music for a long time. So it's not you. It's me. Yeah. And so he bowed out and then really regretted it. And a couple of months later, contacted Fincher and said, I just want to let you know, like, I really would have wanted to do it. It just wasn't a good time. And Fincher said, oh, the job's still open if you want it. Mm. And so he brought in Atticus Ross to kind of help him figure out how to be a composer. Perhaps for the practical ways, but I mean, it very much is a Trent Reznor based approach to making music.
For sure. Yeah.
So, do we? Yeah, I think we've got time. We have time to listen to it. There's one thing. What's interesting? I don't know if it's how they started. I don't know if it's how they finished. But even though it's electronic music for the most part, like I said, there's a vulnerable piano as he describes it. They didn't do any MIDI tracks. They actually recorded and played it live, or recorded it live, as opposed to, you know, cutting and pasting and putting it together after the fact.
Cool. Did they play it to picture, or did they play it live
played it to picture.
To picture.
Wow, that's cool.
They played it to a rough cut, and then, you know, changed it for, you know, moved it around a bit. But I think, and they used analog electronic equipment as well. So that might help. Wow. Anyway, so this is about coming up with a great idea, and it does sound like that. That was Intriguing Possibilities from the soundtrack to The Social Network by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Yeah, it's really very evocative and very Trent Reznor-y, too.
Yeah,
very
you much can so, see yeah. the connection to Nine Inch Nails, but it is very emotional. And it's surprising for something that feels kind of assaultive or in your face here. that when you watch the movie, it's really in the background. It doesn't draw attention to itself.
Well, it's because it evolves very slowly. It's literally minimalism for the most part.
Yeah.
Or post-minimalism anyway, because there's a sort of chorus feel when it blooms. Mm-hmm. But it's a lot like the music of Terry Riley in the 60s, which was most famously mimicked with like Who songs like Baba O'Reilly.
Oh,
sort of percolating synthesizers.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's sort of the...
Terry
one,
Riley.
Yeah.
Oh,
one of the sources. In
well,
C was his big...
Well worth a listen.
His big thing that came out.
Well worth a listen, definitely. Now, also, it also depends on how the movie is mixed, because, depending on what level that music is, it could be in your face or just underneath it.
It depends what's going on in the film. Like, is there stuff, like, is there dialogue? Is there activity? Whatever.
It's great that he did it live, though. That's really...
That might have been his sketches were done that way, and then. But I was just reading an article about it today. And I was surprised.
This certainly sounds like an arpeggiator or a bunch of arpeggiators. But,
for sure.
But, so I guess having it come through speakers and, having that distance or something, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's always
an intriguing way of doing it.
Yeah, that's always an interesting question. Like, do these soundtracks, are they designed for the movie? Or are they designed to be listened to separate from the movie? Or both?
Or both, yeah. Yeah, sometimes it does. Sometimes both doesn't work. You listen to a piece of soundtrack music, and it
falls flat.
It just lies there.
Yeah. You can't really listen to it. You can listen to bits of it.
And sometimes very interesting music. You go, oh, that'd be a great soundtrack, and then you listen to it, and it's too active.
Yeah.
It's all you hear.
Yeah, true that.
That's why so many classical pieces were not used, because they evolve very quickly, and they move from moment to emotional moment very quickly. So that's
work well for cartoons. Ren and Stimpy.
Well, even then, they're cut, so they'll take fragments. The way they use them in the cartoons, and even in original old timey soundtracks, you'll hear bits and pieces of classics, but just enough.
Right.
And even now, for example, I won't try not to go on too much of a tangent, but
you've got 30 seconds for
it. Here we go.
We like tangents.
Like a movie like The Hunger, where they use a piece by Schubert, but they'll loop it a little bit. Or Barry Lyndon, for example, which used a piece by Handel, and it would be the same 4 to 8 bars.
Right.
Over.
They make a loop out of it.
Or they'll just play it that much, and then they don't need the music anymore,
okay.
And then they'll start it again from the beginning.
Well,
next time it's heard.
Speaking of just having a segment of something, we're going to cut you off now.
Yeah.
So that we can have some sort of public service message. So that was just a reminder that Spider-Man will no longer be part of the MCU universe because Sony won't give up the rights to Disney.
Okay,
if you're just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio, streaming on songtalk.ca. And tonight we're talking soundtracks, and we have a special guest, Matt Reed.
Hello.
To explain how it's all been done, because he knows everything about soundtracks. So don't forget, we love to hear from you, especially during the show. So share your thoughts and questions with us at Song Talk Radio on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, and or send an email to feedback@songtalk.ca. We will share your thoughts, so keep that in mind, make them clean, and answer your questions here on the show. Coming up on Song Talk Radio on September 3rd, we're going to be stark naked. We got Paul Stark from Stark Naked and the Flesh Tones.
One of the original Toronto punk bands.
Yeah, and they're still going strong. They are one of the great bands to see live. They really give 110%, well, metaphorically, but 100% realistically. And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at the next Song Talk meetup on Sunday, September 22nd from 1 till 3 or 4 at the Transact Club. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. So, come on by, play us a tune or offer your comments and feedback to those who do play.
Always good.
It is.
So, Matthew, what did you bring for us today?
Well, I'm throwing a little bit of a curveball. We talked about soundtracks that were made bespoke, made purposely for the movie, and we talked about soundtracks which were taken as songs that already existed and placed in. But this one's very interesting because it's a soundtrack that is composed of existing pieces of music, and yet it seems like it was composed specifically for that film. So this is the music from The Shining. Which was originally the score was an original score by composer Wendy Carlos, and it was an electronic score. Mm. And she was used because Stanley Kubrick and she had worked together on Clockwork Orange. I think that was the extent of their relationship. But she wrote a complete score for it, and like with other composers that Kubrick worked with, like Alex North on 2001, listened to the score and thought, yeah, it's just not working.
Thank you, but no.
To be fair, he's usually right.
That's true.
So he ended up doing what he did before and just went to like just listening to contemporary composers because he wanted that real sense of madness in the film and real spookiness. And so he ended up finding it in composers of the avant-garde of the 60s and early 70s. So he took this a bunch of pieces by Krzysztof Penderecki and Ligeti and even earlier going back to Bartok in the 30s. Hmm. But I picked this piece by Penderecki. And very interestingly, it's an eight-minute piece. We're not going to listen to the whole thing. But the music editor did such a good job. His name's Gordon Stainforth. Did such a good job of putting these pieces into place that there were very few cuts. So there's none of that butchering that you'll sometimes have when you put like a piece of classical music or existing music into a film. Hmm. And there's only one small cut. So he plays the piece from the beginning. He cuts it at 4 minutes and 25 seconds, cuts about 10 seconds out, and then resumes and goes pretty much to the end. And this is the scene in The Shining, if you remember, when Wendy enters with the baseball bat, and it's the whole "Give me the bat, Wendy," and
all right,
ending with him getting conked on the head and then dragged into the freezer.
Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm. And what is this called?
It's called Polymorphia, and it's from 1962.
1962, right.
Yeah. Some even said this was the first time the avant-garde sort of made sense to them as far as listening.
Yeah. Really? Okay. So what was the nature of this composer? Was this an aberration, or was this the kind of music that he did? Or
this was his earlier stuff in the early 60s. So he was experimenting with pure sonorities and extended techniques, they call on with instruments. So a violin can be played as you normally expect to hear it, that lush, beautiful sound with the bow against the strings. He was playing it sometimes with the wood scraping on the fretboard, playing above the bridge for those squeaks, lots of little glissandi. And a big thing, he was one of the first people to really compose with these clusters. So you think of all the notes on a piano being played at once or in sections. So he's doing that. He's doing that with the strings, and there was a lot.
I mean, clustered, like harmonically clustered.
Yeah,
like he's not doing major minor chords, right?
No, there's no chords at all. There might be some tonal areas, sort of. They might come towards certain tones, but you'd be hearing more of these sonorities. And a lot of his pictures, a lot of his scores are actually more like pictures in a sense.
Mm. Was he writing scores or was he just writing music that were used for like Kubrick used in this?
No, he was a classical composer. So this was a concert piece.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. So this and it would terrify the hell out of people because it was, what is this? This is, you know, this post-war craziness.
And but how did he transcribe it for his musicians in the orchestra?
There would be, he had to do it differently. There would be pictures. There'd be using these notes. He'd use instead of bars. At some points, he'd write out this will happen for this many seconds. We'd write a line, say, right. 15 seconds, 20 seconds, and then the next event would start.
So he almost like timelines, right?
Yeah. Oh,
it's for avant-garde. It is very musical, though.
Well, we're used to it now because it's very old now.
You said 1962.
1962, and the thing is, we hear soundtracks. I suppose ever since soundtrack composers and classical composers sort of had a great divide in whenever that happened, and I guess in the 50s or 60s.
When 53, it was a Wednesday afternoon.
Was it Wednesday?
That's right.
I can't remember what I ate that day, but I remember being satisfied. But the soundtrack composers will sometimes lag a little bit in what becomes palatable in film scores. So I'm certainly hearing these. You'd hear drones and clusters before, but now I'm hearing it everywhere. And so many TV scores now, these avant-garde composers of the 60s and early 70s, you hear their mark in so many scores. And in sample libraries, all these little effects are like invented by guys like Penderecki and Ligeti.
That's so cool.
Huh. Amazing. Yeah. Yeah, this is really fascinating because, like, there's like when you look at the Danny Elfmans and the John Williams and the Howard Shores and all those guys, they're very much harking back to classical romantic kind of music. But then there's this whole other thing, like this modern music, and it really reminds me of this. There's a CBC Ideas podcast I heard a while back called 9 Minutes That Changed the World, and it's basically an investigation into the first 9 minutes of Prelude to a Faun. It was a Claude Debussy piece in like the end of the 19th century, and the historian on the podcast was talking about how this kind of heralded in this modern era
of the modern,
where you're not doing major minor chords anymore. You're doing dissonances. You're bringing in these weird melodies that don't fit with the kind of romantic, you know, structure of what we know to be
non-functional
music.
Harmony,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we always think, you know, modern music, but that to me, like that's true modern music. We're actually really pulling outside of the traditional structures.
Yeah, and after a while, even that becomes sort of becomes a standard.
Exactly.
Becomes conservative.
It becomes conservative. Blasé, we've heard this before.
So my choice, I had a lot of trouble figuring out which one to go for because everyone, I just kept on thinking, oh, this one. So
you kept us in the dark, too.
I did.
You said it was going to be one of two choices.
One of two choices.
So what's it
going to
be,
So it's
Bell?
Going to be the soundtrack to Betty Blue, a 1986 French erotic psychological drama film.
Aren't they all?
Which of the French title is 37 degrees to le matin, meaning 37.2 degrees Celsius in the morning. And it was directed by Jean-Jacques Binet. And this one of the reasons I love this is that...
Who's the composer?
The composer is Gabriel Yared. And it's French without being cloying and... without being, you know, cliche, but it does sound very French. It's a movie about, you know, this love affair that happens in the summer, so it kind of feels like summer. It's very emotive. It's a beautiful soundtrack. It's one of the ones I listen to all the time, actually.
It's a beautiful film, too.
And a beautiful film, actually, and which I have on a DVD. Unfortunately, it's Region 2. So we can't actually watch it, much to our chagrin. So this one's called Betty et Zorg from the Betty Blue soundtrack. Thank you. So that was Betty at Zorg from the Betty Blue
Zorg?
Zorg. Z-O-R-G. Z-O-R-G.
I was just thinking, I just got a notion. I think what we should do is we should take all of our favorite soundtracks mm-hmm. and we should swap them into each other's films and see how they work.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, if you put that behind The Shining, that would be kind of a great difference.
Yeah, I'm thinking of taking your soundtrack and putting it in some scenes in The Social Network.
Yeah, like that would... you see Batman running along to the little French.
But yeah, see how it is. Like,
somehow
it is
he's
a very...
somewhat less intimidating.
Yeah,
he's
less
intimidating. But it's a very, it's still a very, it's still a very French, you know, feel to it.
Yeah,
very, very
yeah.
kind of
pastoral.
Soft and open.
Yeah,
and you know, it's not sickeningly sweet. It's a very nice point. And the whole soundtrack from top to bottom is just great. Actually,
now you said you were torn between two. What was the other, and what tipped it in the favor of Betty Blue?
Well, but because the other one is going to go for, and we're going to do our runners-up quickly.
Oh, okay.
Which I will talk. So my first runners-up is actually, I'll talk about the other one that I was going to do, but the one I have to say, talk about, which I think is the most important movie, is the Star Wars theme. Mm-hmm. Because that is so effective. And I think that's one of the reasons why the movie did so well. Mm-hmm, because you're in the middle, in the dark theater, and you have that opening chord, and there's actually a tutorial you can find online where they actually teach you how to do that, how to orchestrate that opening chord. Mm-hmm. It's
beautiful. And it
it's
lines
exciting.
Up with the 20th Century Fox theme, doesn't it?
Comes right out of it.
It comes right out of it. Like the 20th Century Fox thing goes off, and the first chord
it's
of Star Wars.
Yeah, it's in the same key. Actually.
Yeah.
Which is so nice. Yeah. But they always had a bit of space between.
Of course,
them, so
yeah. There's
came,
the
and that was, and it was just so. When that happened, it was so exciting.
Does it start
and
with a string sting.
It was like,
bam, full brass. Yeah,
and it's just so exciting at the time. There's nothing like it, and it was just. It really changed, I think, soundtracks.
Oh, for sure.
It certainly brought them back to an earlier era too. Because. They were becoming more austere. There was more rock and disco in soundtracks up to that point.
Oh, gotta put an end to that.
More dissonant, very dissonant music.
Yeah.
So it brought that. Yeah, it brought that heroism back into the soundtrack.
It was so much fun. You just like knew I was going to have some fun.
Yeah.
So Neil, what's your first runner-up?
So I had a bunch of runner-ups, and when I did my list of runner-ups, I really had to admit to myself that I do have a soft spot for the romantics, mm-hmm. like that kind of traditional sort of thing. So Lord of the Rings, Howard Shore, when I first saw that movie, I'm like, if this doesn't win the Oscar for Best Soundtrack, then something's wrong with the
world,
right?
Yeah, I was thinking
about
that one, Matt. Because it's leitmotifs.
Yeah, and it's really very much in that Star Wars style, the leitmotifs.
Yeah.
And Howard Shore actually also did the soundtrack for The Fly back in the 80s.
That's right. He was Cronenberg's composer.
He was Cronenberg's guy for a while there. Yeah. And The Fly was a really interesting...
That was a great movie.
Ennio Morricone for The Untouchables.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool
very
soundtrack
striking.
With the kind of Art Deco kind of thing going on. And actually, one of my favorite soundtracks, Michael Giacchino for The Incredibles.
Oh, yeah.
Which
oh,
had this like, really cool big band. What's that?
Yep.
Michael Giacchino for The Incredibles, kind of big band jazzy thing going on, which kind of fit the movie in this weird way, which was which was pretty neat.
The first one, too. Same style.
Yeah, and one of my favorite action movies from the 80s. Again, you can tell I'm very much an 80s guy. Alan Silvestri for The Predator, which was actually a really cool, interesting soundtrack.
I don't recall the music from that.
It's very kind of bombastic and sort of manly, whatever if you want to say that. And similar to the Trent Reznor, Harold Faltermeyer for Beverly Hills Cop was very memorable. You know what I mean?
Well, similar in that it was synthesizers.
It was synthesizers. You know, that sort of the kind of bassy thing.
But
going
it was
on.
Actually a hit, right?
It was.
Oh yeah, Axel F.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Went on to
much music. Yeah. Well,
like an instrumental.
Yes,
right?
For an instrumental.
So Matthew, what were your runner-ups?
Well, I'll give you a few. Obviously. Mr. Williams, I have a very soft spot for, but I'm not going to talk about him. Everybody knows Mr. Williams. So this composer was my runner-up, and Penderecki became my first because I realized how much he was influenced by Penderecki and Ligeti. Mm. So Johan Johansson's score for Sicario is, I find, incredibly effective. Just you know, white knuckle score, and very simple. There's one... I think the piece is called The Beast that really stuck out to me. And it's just low basses, slightly out of tune with each other, bass section slightly amplified, just sliding down a minor third, as almost like Iron Man, but not, and a very distorted percussive sound, like a very loud white noise, just bah, bah. And he's using an adaptive limiter or a maximizer to just compress, and you don't think it can get any louder. It just gets louder. There's the sensation of getting louder and louder and louder, like beyond where you're thinking these speakers should be peaking. This should not be physically possible. And then it just goes back. And it's just because, I mean, this film, there's a lot of driving around in the, what are they called? The
helicopters?
Humvees. Just driving in Humvees. Just a lot of and without that soundtrack, it's just a bunch of people driving around in Humvees a lot of the time.
Yeah, it gives them intention and danger.
Yeah. And danger, yeah.
Michael, what are your runner-ups?
I think I'd mentioned before the Giorgio Moroder soundtrack for Midnight Express and also for Cat People. It was really interesting. But what I was... At first I was going to bring in was the soundtrack to Apocalypse Now, which is just rich and fascinating. I used to listen to just the soundtrack. I mean, I'd seen the movie a couple of times. But I had a hard time tracking it down, and I had thought that it was composed by Mickey Hart from The Grateful Dead, but the credit is to Carmine Coppola, Francis Ford Coppola's father.
Oh.
So I was a little confused on who did it, so I thought... That just makes it too difficult. And then I remembered the Social Network, and I just that had blown me away.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of interesting soundtracks out there.
I did a parody of Apocalypse Now some years ago, discovering that soundtrack and trying to approximate it.
Another one of my runner-ups, which is the second one I was going to go for, was the theme for Wings of Desire by Wim Wenders, Jürgen Knieper. From top to bottom, just beautiful, sometimes atonal, but light and beautiful, and just fantastic melodies all the way through. But also, Wim Wenders is also another one of runner-ups would be the soundtrack to Until the End of the World, where he actually...
And The End of Violence is also his movie, and it's a great soundtrack.
Yes. But for Until the End of the World, he actually commissioned all these artists to write songs the way songs would be 10 years in the future at the time. So it's quite interesting. It's actually a better soundtrack than the movie. The movie actually was pretty weak. And, of course, Blade Runner by Vangelis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know,
okay.
Of course.
Yeah.
Can't lose.
Yeah.
The piano, Michael Nyman.
Yeah.
Some people feel the piano is a bit heavy. I don't know, I kind of like it. And the theme for a Gladiator, another Vangelis.
Oh, yeah.
And,
that's Vangelis as well.
That's Vangelis, really.
Yeah.
I thought it was
Zimmer.
I thought it was both.
Zimmer, yeah.
And that I really think was great, even though the movie's not great, is Tron Legacy and Daft Punk.
Daft Punk.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was really good, you know, it's cool stuff.
That's cool.
So.
I just wanted to, you made me think of something. And the movie The Long Goodbye, which is a great movie, has throughout it, the one song, The Long Goodbye, but it's in almost every scene done in completely different styles throughout the movie.
Wow, so that'd be a fascinating thing to listen to.
It's a great movie, too. Yeah. But we've got to give a shout-out to Carl Stalling.
Yes.
Who did the Merry Melodies.
Yes.
Oh, that was great.
Music. Because that was live orchestras, and that kind of, you know, breakneck pace and shift in tone. And you can buy the Carl Stalling project. And it's the soundtrack to Merry Melodies. And here, and you can, on it, there's some false starts. You can hear him go, no, do that again, like where someone misses their cue, because it's a full orchestra, and it's 1, 2, 3, go, and they just did this breakneck. It's fantastic. Especially, I like to use it as dinner party music. Because you play it, and then someone across the table, it'll hit them, and like, they are seeing that scene, you know, ding, 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 click, ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding. Oh, yeah, power plant.
Then they'll remember a funnel in their mouth and someone pouring gravy down their throat. So
different people will remember different Bugs Bunny cartoons at different times. So the Carl Stalling project, for sure.
Brilliant. And may I give a quick shout-out to Max Steiner, composer of King Kong, the first full movie score for a full movie.
Oh, really?
Apparently, yeah. And brilliant composer, did tons of stuff after that, Gone with the Wind, and I can't remember what else, but tons of films.
But the idea that you would have music for a movie in its entirety, as opposed to just putting
bits and pieces, a song here and there. Someone can correct me, but I remember some of the first talkies that came out. We watch them now, and there's no score. Like Fritz Lang's M, Dracula and Frankenstein, they're completely barren except for speech. And I don't know if they still had a pianist performing
playing
with them.
Live with them.
Yeah,
there is actually this great. We'll add to the show notes the link to this. It's this instrument that basically allowed you to do merry melodies things by one person. It uses a piano roll.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
And the operator is like hitting, like pulling these levers and making the whistle go and
booming,
and it's just the best thing ever. It must be the most annoying thing to live next to.
I think it's really
loud, but man, is it ever, ever great. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen that, but.
Ding, 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 ding,
ding. You darn idiot!
Well, it's great when you start paying attention to what music can do to a visual piece, especially when it does it well.
Yeah.
And but there's been a couple of movies. Interesting. There's been movies when my friends and I have left and went, oh, the music is so annoying because it's too loud or too much in your face. We don't tend to remember those ones, but.
No, that's why I had a hard time trying to think of negative ones. Like,
I think of Lady Hawk, Alan Parsons Project. Oh my God, it's the worst.
That's because you just don't like the band.
No, I do. I have an album or two, but it was so wrong. It's a medieval story, and it's really loud and intrusive. It's my vote for the worst soundtrack ever.
All right. I know Princess Bride hasn't particularly aged well because they were just starting to use MIDI orchestras at that point to save on money.
It's kind of fake instrument.
Everything about that movie is perfect. Everything.
It's a wonderful movie.
Oh, look, the switchboard is lighting up with complaints. You're not coming back.
I'm the provocative one.
You can't knock the Princess Bride. Come on.
And speaking of soundtracks.
Okay.
I think it's...
That's our soundtrack.
That's our soundtrack. Because that's all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio. Matthew, thank you so much for coming out.
Great to be back.
You'll come out again.
It was a pleasure to get excited talking to you guys.
You always got a great big musical brain, and we like to leech off it. Why don't you send us your impressions on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Song Talk Radio. Send us an email at feedback@songtalk.ca. And be sure to check out the YouTube channel for live performance videos from our guests, full episodes, and all sorts of great stuff. Why don't you stop by the site at songtalk.ca just to see what's happening? Why don't you subscribe to the podcast, Song Talk Radio podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher.com, Spotify, or the Podcast Addict. Don't forget to sign up for the free newsletter at songtalk.ca as well. You can find the links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned here on Song Talk Radio on the resources page, maybe even links to all the soundtracks.
We mentioned a lot tonight.
That's true. Someone's got to get busy. If you happen to be in the Toronto area, why don't you join us for the next Song Talk meetup on Sunday, September 22nd at 1 p.m. at the Transact Club. Free to join on meetup.com and free to attend. Stop by the site for a link and all that good stuff. Thank you very much, Micah, for the work on social media, on the tech board. Think about who's it, Rita. Thank you for working so hard. And most of all, we'd like to thank you, the devoted listener. You can follow Mr. Neil at
neilmodi.com.
Matthew, how do people get in touch with you?
Oh, man, just go to Spotify and look me up, man.
Spotify and look you up.
Look
okay.
me up. Or Apple Music, look for my
Matthew
look for my
Reed,
stuff.
It's M-A...
Pay to play.
M-A... What is it? M-A...
M-A-T-T-H-E-W...
R...
R-E-I-D.
R-E-I-D. Okay, it's Matthew Reed. And Micah, you can be on...
Where can we find you, Micah?
At Jimmy Micah on Instagram.
On Instagram. Whoa. And, of course...
How would Michael's you spell Jimmy Micah? Because I was searching for that.
Oh. Is it Jimmy underscore Micah?
No, it's... Oh, I keep hitting the mic. It's JimmyMicah.
All right.
Do you know how to spell Micah, Mike?
What?
You do now?
And, of course, Mr. That's Proudfoot, you don't
I
want
prefer
to,
not be followed.
And Rita, she's mysterious. You can follow me at the Phil Emery on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you this time next week. Good night, everyone.
See ya.
Good night.